Blog Talk Radio.
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Welcome, welcome, welcome into Next Fan Up, a brand new podcast which is by the fans for the fans. And this week, we're going to be focusing on the NFC South with a bit of roundtable discussion with each of our three representatives, who I shall introduce for you now. Chase Mallett is our Saints super fan. How are you, Chase?
I'm doing good, guys. Who dat?
Timothy Jester is our Falcons super fan.
Hey, guys. How we doing? Rise up, Atlanta.
And Jimmy Six, down there in Carolina. How are you, Jimmy?
Hey, how you doing? King of the South, baby.
Kings of the South for this year alone. Right, so the format of our podcast this week is going to be delving into free agency, seeing how this division is shaping up heading into 2015. We'll then look at the draft a little bit before moving on to a question and answer session, where we can pick apart how we are going to reclaim the NFC South in 2015. So I'll kick things off, and I'll start in Atlanta with you, Tim. So how's free agency gone for you guys? And do you want to talk through the additions you've made so far and how that's really changed the makeup of this team as Dan Quinn's come over and he's trying to recreate this legion of boom down in the South?
Yeah, it's definitely it's been an interesting start to free agency for sure, if not a little bit slow. Falcons fans, as a whole, we kind of expected a little bit more. You know, we made a lot of changes on the coaching staff, but as far as the roster's gone during free agency, we've brought in a couple like pieces, but we haven't brought in anything like that's really big and can do anything. As far as the biggest needs on the team, which in my personal opinion would be the pass rush number one and the offensive line being number two. As far as the pass rush, the biggest signing that I think that we brought in would be Adrian Claiborne. Severe injury history for sure. And as is the case across the list of the people we brought in, including Justin Durant, linebacker coming over from the Cowboys. We have quality talent that we brought in, but the injury history is a big scare, especially, for Falcons fans, as we've had talent at these positions before, but due to injuries, they've not been on the field. So it'll be really interesting to see, how Dan Quinn works with that. Hopefully, when he changed some coaches, he changed the medical staff as well, because they have been garbage over the past few years. Like I said, Adrian Claiborne coming in, he has a history of being able to get to the quarterback. And apparently, they have some high hopes for former Texan Brooks Reed as well. Not a lot of big sack numbers, but I don't think I'd be able to get to the quarterback following JJ Watt there anyways either. And then coming over from Seattle, really excited about defensive end and linebacker O'Brien Schofield. When rumors came out that we were looking at him and bringing him into Atlanta, there was a lot of excitement that we'd have somebody who was familiar with Dan Quinn's system to be able to help the defensive ends and the linebackers learn that system. So it'll be interesting. Not super excited about free agency, but there's still some hope, as there's still some players that fit positions of need out there for us. Specifically, I'd love to see Brandon Spikes come down from New England. That way we don't have to continue playing the awful Paul Warlow at middle linebacker. You might as well have, Chase Mallett over there, repping the Saints for us, because, he racks up tackles, but they're all 9 yards down the field, and what is the point even? Just let them score so that our offense can get back on the field and try to do something. But, like I said, it's been interesting, and we'll see how it continues. And Dan Quinn definitely knows a little bit more about it than I do, so, I'll hand it over to him and see what he can do.
So when it comes to rebuilding that defensive line, you let Umeniora go. Do you think that he's addressing that early on so that he can then focus on the back end, maybe through the draft?
I mean, as far as Umanyora really last year only came in on third down to try to get to the quarterback and fail, except for in that classic Week 16 smashing of the New Orleans Saints, where he was able to get to the quarterback, strip sack Drew Brees, and then take it to the house. That was fantastic. I appreciated the little goodbye that he waved before the touchdown. As far as Umanyora, really nice guy, but, you know, didn't really do anything for us. And, you know, it says something when, you know, your best pass rusher last year was Croy Bierman, and, you know, he's not fantastic. But, you know, in Seattle, they've had a history of having multiple people who are able to get to the quarterback, and that's what it looks like we're doing, is bringing in depth so that we can continue to have a rotation of people who are able to get there and, you know, kind of be a little bit more creative, but with a more basic scheme than we had last year under Nolan.
And just switching to the offense quickly, you've lost Harry Douglas, Roddy White's been banged up, and Blaylock, I'm not sure if he's going to re-sign. So how's the offense looking heading into 2015?
Well, Blaylock was a cap casualty. You know, we had to get rid of him, and also he doesn't fit Kyle Shanahan's zone blocking scheme. Blaylock, you're really big. He's good at blocking, but he's not good at moving. So, you know, where he has been one of the anchors on the offensive line with the stability over the past few years, and that's really good to have. If he can't fit the scheme, then, you know, there's no need to have him there. Rumors have been circling that the Falcons are going to try Sam Baker at the left guard position and move him over from tackle, which will, you know, keep him from having to move as much as he had at the tackle position and hopefully keep him a little bit more healthy. But we need to see him get healthy before we can actually, you know, try to plug him into that spot and see what happens. As far as wide receiver, I'm not too worried about Roddy White. We're going to move him more towards the slot and just have him pick up yardage, you know, a la Wes Welker, and, you know, convert a couple third and sixes, you know, if those happen to come up. You know, Julio Jones, I'd love to see us lock him into a long-term contract, and rumors are that Thomas Dimitroff is working on that. But we did bring in Leonard Hankerson, who is coming off of an ACL injury, and with the awful Robert Griffin III throwing him the ball, he's had a couple okay years. And realistically, that's all you need when you have Julio on one side, who is the best wide receiver in football, hands down. When he's healthy, Julio is the best. There is no argument for that. You know, all you need is somebody who is okay on the other side and, you know, can make sure that Julio is only dealing with a double team and not a triple team. So it will be interesting. The biggest thing for the wide receivers is if Matt Ryan can stay on his feet and not be on his back the entire season, then they're going to make plays.
I'd agree with that. It always helps when, well, in my eyes, you've got a top five receiver there. So that'll take a lot of the heat off Roddy White. Moving on to Jimmy and the Panthers. Do you want to talk through how you're going to help Cam Newton next year and some of the moves you've made to do that?
You know, when free agency started and Dave Gettleman said we will no longer be shopping at the thrift store, I think all Carolina Panther fans got pretty excited. And when you look at what we've done, I feel like all we have done is shop at the thrift store. But as far as any major additions, we haven't made any significant additions, in my opinion. I mean, we've brought in Michael Orr at left tackle, which I think is an upgrade over Byron Bell. Is it much of an upgrade? We'll see. I do think he'll be better than he played in Tennessee. I was hoping maybe we could move him to the right side of the line where I thought he played better when he was in Baltimore, but sounds like he's going to be the left tackle. And I think he'll be an upgrade over Byron Bell, but we'll see if he stays healthy and how consistent he is throughout the play. And then as far as everybody else we brought, a lot of them were re-signed, and we kept a lot of the defensive line intact within Colin Cole, DeJuan Edwards. I think those are two significant re-signs under the radar. Perfect Dave Gettleman moves. Same thing with Ed Dixon on the offensive side. I think he came on strong in the last portion of the season when Greg Olsen was getting a little dinged up. I thought Dixon really played well. And another under-the-radar move that I thought was a good move was bring back Ted Ginn from Arizona. And I'm not going to say he's going to be a significant impact on the receiving game, but the kick return alone, I'm excited not to see Brenton Burson back there, because every time the ball was kicked to him, I was getting nervous, and Ted Ginn at least gives me a little reassurance back there. I know we brought in Kurt Coleman from Kansas City, who's hung out behind Eric Berry. I think he'll be a good depth filler, especially with Roman Harper. Roman Harper's not the guy he was last year or the guy he was 5 years ago. But I do think Kurt Coleman will be a good depth player. And I read today that Alan Ball, there's been rumors he left Carolina without a contract. He left Carolina with a contract. But I read today that we did lock him up for a one-year deal. Like I said, I think that'll be a good depth spot. I think they're going to try to pair him up across the way from Josh Norman and put Ben Wickery back in the slot as a nickel corner. And then there's rumors swirling around with Greg Jennings, and I think that would be an interesting pickup. Whether I don't think it's going to be an expensive pickup, but I think it'll be an upgrade over Cotchery. I think he'll be a good receiver to put on the other side of Benjamin and even mentor Benjamin and whatever young receivers we're bringing this year. I think that'll be an interesting play if that does fall through. And if that does happen, I think the draft will change a little bit as far as how much of an impact and a priority wide receiver will be coming in the draft.
Well, with his injury history, I'm looking at D'Angelo Williams has gone and Jonathan Stewart now is really your only bell cow back there. Do you think he can stay healthier for a whole year and take the load off Cam?
I wish, but I can't say I'm confident in that happening. The last time I felt confident with Jonathan Stewart running well, I mean, was I still say the 2008 season with D'Angelo and Jonathan Stewart were both rushed for over 1,000. Outside of that, Jonathan Stewart's been very shaky. And I know a lot of people are high on him, especially finishing the season the way he did last year, but you can't be confident going in with him as your main guy. And we did bring back Fozzie Whitaker. I think Fozzie Whitaker can be as impactful as D'Angelo with a lot cheaper cost, but I'm not going to put him on the same level as D'Angelo. I think D'Angelo is definitely down from what he used to be, but I would expect the Carolina Panthers to bring in somebody from the draft, whether it's a Tevin Coleman or maybe even just a low free agent as training camp starts to come. But I certainly can't be confident in Jonathan Stewart staying healthy the entire season.
And moving on to Chase now, I know this is your second podcast now, so you're a bit of an expert. And you've already touched on a lot of your free agency moves, but let's put it into a bit of context for the NFC South. I mean, the big names out there, Brandon Browner, CJ Spiller, and I guess Max Unger would be the big one I would touch on. Do you think protecting Drew Brees is going to be a point of emphasis going into next year?
Well, I definitely think it is. Drew Brees' game is dictated on the interior offensive line, buying him time and giving him will to climb up in the pocket, go through his progressions and find the open man. And we saw last year Brees facing much more interior pressure than he usually does. And that's what led us to make the trade of Grubbs to Kansas City. We had over $20 million in cap space tied up into our two guards, which we just could not deal with. As everyone knows, the Saints have been in cap hell for years now. But I think actually some of the bigger deals in free agency for us are the guys we lost this year. We're having to, between cutting Pierre Thomas and trading Graham and Steeles, we're having to replace almost 2,200 yards receiving last year. The question is, how do you replace that with the guys we have on the roster? And we haven't done much in free agency to, I think the Unger deal is going to help give Brees some more time, and that's going to let some of the third and fourth receivers on the team maybe find some receptions. Spiller, I think, is going to do a pretty good job of replacing Thomas. He has a very similar skill set. And in the 1 year where you really saw Spiller get used to his, how should I put this, when he got used the correct way, I believe, by being creative, lining them up all over, he had 1,600 yards all purpose. So that's not that big a deal. As for the guys we brought in, like you touched on Unger. Unger is an amazing run blocking center, and I think that's showing you that the Saints are going to kind of change their identity. We're going to try to go back to more of a run first team, and Unger should help if he can stay healthy, which is a big problem. Like Tim, our free agents have all missed time last year due to injury, and as long as we can keep Unger on the field, that should let Lolito move to guard to replace Grubbs, and that should strengthen our interior line, because Evans, while he had a down year in terms of pass pass blocking last year. He was actually very good run blocker still. That's Brandon Browner. I'm not that big a fan of the move. We had enough defensive penalties last year without adding the most penalized DB in the league. But he should help out from a leadership standpoint at the very least. And he has experience. He's been on the last two Super Bowl winning teams. He can't be any worse than Patrick Robinson and Corey Whitewood last year for us. So overall, I think we did pretty good with the budget we had allotted to us in free agency this year.
And I'll just touch on my Bucs now, because it's been a lot of big moves with the Bucs. Well, I say big moves. It's getting rid of last year's terrible, terrible signings. Lovey's moved really quickly to get rid of the players that either didn't fit his scheme or didn't produce a high enough level based on their salary. I was actually quite pleased to see Michael Johnson and Anthony Collins go, because they've recognised that you can't keep people around if they're not producing. And the way Lovey's scheme works, you need to be able to rush the quarterback with five or fewer defensive tackles and ends. So let's go to the draft. Let's get some defensive ends there that can really grow with the team and put alongside Gerald McCoy and Clinton McDonald and now Henry Melton, and really put pressure on Breeze, Ryan and Newton. You know, it's a very quarterback-heavy division, so I'm really glad they got rid of those guys. Josh McCown, that's a no-brainer as well. I mean, in 11 games, 11 touchdowns and 14 interceptions kind of says it all. Mason Foster, we let go. He's gone up to the Bears, I believe. Again, it's just not a good scheme fit for Lovey. But in terms of the guys we've brought in, I'm actually really excited about Bruce Carter. He's a guy that I really liked coming out of North Carolina. He's a really quick, instinctive linebacker. And I think in pass coverage, that's where he will excel in Lovey's scheme. I've touched on Henry Melton a little bit. And again, he's more so focused on pass rush, which is something that we will need. And then if we can contain quarterbacks on the outside by adding some defensive end, that would be really, really helpful for the Buccaneers, who were absolutely terrible getting after the quarterback this year. And then I think adding depth was really key for Lovey and bringing guys that he's comfortable with. Chris Conte, a guy that came over from the Bears, a free safety who can compete with Deshaun Goldson, who I assume will be a cap casualty next year, if not later on this year, if they can get some sort of trade worked out. But I think he's got 9 interceptions over his past 4 years with the Bears, so you can't really turn your nose up at that. And the other guy, Sterling Moore, who was in Dallas, and much like Henry Melton, they've learned under Rod Marinelli, so again, there's connections to Tampa there. And that's another depth pick behind Keith Tandy and Alteron Werner. So overall, I'm actually fairly pleased with where the Bucs are now compared to last year. It's kind of funny, really, because we went through all those years where we were screaming at the Glazers to put money into free agency and get these big ticket items. And then you slowly figure out that the best way to do it is just follow the Packers and Steelers and draft well and pay guys to keep them when their contract's up. So I think things are looking up. You can't get much worse than 2-14 anyway. So let's head on to the draft now. I'll just mention quickly, you can get in touch with us. You can hit us up on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And we're also on Facebook at NFU Podcast. I'll go back through in the same order that I went through the first time. Moving on to Atlanta, where do you see the new Dan Quinn regime looking to early in the draft? Because let's face it, we've all got early draft picks.
As far as the draft pick, we're picking 8th. And, you know, there's as far as who it'll be, I'm not 100% certain. I know what it'll be. It will be a pass rusher. There's a lot of quality pass rushers at the top of this year's draft class, and or at least we think they're going to be quality. Whoever we draft is going to Jadeveon Clowney it up and then just end up getting hurt, and because that's what people do in Atlanta. But, you know, as far as who I want to come in, you know, I'm really high on Dante Fowler, Randy Gregory, Vic Beasley, that trio of guys. I'd really like to see one of them, and legitimately I think that one of them will be there for us. So the biggest need that we have in Dan Quinn's system is that Leo linebacker slash defensive end who can move around, get in different positions, and really just get after the quarterback. And while we do have, you know, a couple set pieces, we need, you know, the guy to come in and take care of that. And that's the only thing I'm really focused on so far in the draft. In round one, we do need to get a pass rusher. In later rounds, you know, second round, I'd love to see Denzel Perryman from Miami, the inside linebacker, come in. He's a little bit small for Dan Quinn's system at only 5'11", but, I mean, he plays a lot bigger than that. And later in the draft, we do need a wide receiver, and we do need another running back to put in tandem with Devontae Freeman and the injured Anton Smith, who hopefully he can recover from the broken leg and still take 60-yard touchdowns to the house on 4-yard passes. So, you know, there's so many needs, and, you know, there always will be for a team that goes back-to-back, you know, 4-12 and then 6-10. You know, this doesn't get fixed overnight, unfortunately. So hopefully just pass rusher early and then depth, you know, throughout the draft and not miss in the second through fifth rounds like we're known to do. And even miss in the first through seventh rounds like we're known to do. So hopefully we can just pick something and it actually works.
I'm not sure who has the final say when it comes to the draft room. I assume Arthur Blank's got quite a lot of say, bearing in mind he's always on the sidelines in the fourth quarter. But do you think his impression of this team is that they are still in win-now mode, or is it officially rebuilding in Falcons land?
We're definitely not in rebuild mode, and we're not necessarily in win-now mode either. Based on the way that our contracts are put together, you know, we are built for the long haul, but we do have to keep in mind that Matt Ryan is creeping on 30 years old. And then key pieces of the defense, including William Moore, also creeping on 30 years old, if he's not there already. I should have looked up his age before we started doing this. But, you know, I realistically think that if we can shore up the left guard position and get a pass rush, we're back in the playoffs. That's the only two key needs that I look at on paper to put us winning this division. And, you know, I'm sure that you guys have two needs and you win the division as well, and that's how every fan's going to look at it. But it wasn't long ago that the Falcons were one play away from the Super Bowl, and oh my God, that Harry Douglas dropping that ball right there, even though Tony Gonzalez, the best tight end in NFL history, is wide open in the end zone. Matt Ryan hits Tony Gonzalez. The Falcons win the Super Bowl in New Orleans, which would have been the best thing that's ever happened in my entire life. But, I mean, we fixed the pass rush, shore up left guard, and, you know, we're back in the playoffs.
And Jimmy, looking at Carolina, I mean, 7-8-1, but you're picking down in the 20s. Is it more about getting value, or do you think they're going to try and package and move up? How do you see them attacking the draft this year?
I definitely think watching Dave Gettleman going into his third year, last year when we did our super fan mock draft, I had us addressing the offensive tackle position, and I cannot see us overlooking that position again, despite bringing in Michael Orr. We must do something on the offensive line. You have to protect Cam. Cam got beat up last year. Everyone keeps emphasizing that he has no one to throw to. He has no one to block him. Last year, watching him run for his life was nerve-wracking as any other thing. If we don't address the offensive line in the first round, every time I've seen any type of mock drafts or reading what they're looking at, I keep seeing DJ Humphreys or TJ Clemmings. And TJ Clemmings scares me a little bit just because he's from Pitt. And we took Jeff Otaw a couple years from Pitt, and he never panned out. I just hope that doesn't happen again. But if we don't address the offensive tackle position, I can see us going maybe a Jalen Strong wide receiver to pair up with Kelvin Benjamin. We need to add some speed across the way. If not there, I think we got to go corner. No name corners out there who've been doing a fine job thanks to the front seven, but eventually they're going to get exposed, and it's just a matter of time. Losing Greg Hardy, even though he wasn't there last year, we're losing starting to lose some of that line. Everyone's getting a year older. Another position that would not surprise me is if he addresses or takes another defensive end. Last year in the second round, we took Coney Ealy, and everyone was up in arms. Not at him, but it's just not a position of need. And with Hardy gone, next year Charles Johnson's cap number I think is either $16 million, up around that range. And I would not be surprised if he's a cap cut type of person next year. And I mean, even Charles Johnson hinted on Twitter the other day that he looks to play with Greg Hardy again. Whether I don't see Carolina bring back Greg Hardy, but I don't know if he's implying that he may go to Dallas next year. But I would not be surprised if Charles Johnson is cut just for cap purposes and he ends up walking. So I think Gettleman, I mean, he likes his rotation of linemen. I think we do pick up another lineman early in the draft to put in there and plug and play to help replace the Hardy.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if it's an offense-heavy draft. But, yeah, when the head coach is defensive-minded, you can certainly understand that line rotation. And Chase, the Saints, how do you see them looking at this draft?
Well, the Saints are a hard team to predict. Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis love going best player available. Like you saw last year, we traded up to take Brandon Cooks, and no one thought that wide receiver was a position of great need for the Saints. I think this year we're going to have to stick to need a little bit more, because I think this is the year, more so than the last 5-6, that we have a good bit of needs to get back into contention. We definitely need some bodies at the linebacker position. As pass rushers and middle linebackers, we had a terrible run defense last year, and our middle linebackers could not keep up in coverage with tight ends and running backs. Also think even the Browner sign, and we could use another cornerback and interior offensive line to compete with Lalito. I also wouldn't be surprised, with as much as Loomis likes to move around the draft, if the Saints wouldn't trade up to try to get in front of Atlanta, if they covet a pass rusher that they feel Atlanta might take. I would love a Shane Ray or a Vic Beasley at number 13. Shane Ray scares me a little bit, just because we didn't see the production we were expecting out of the Missouri line that got drafted early last year. And Beasley's athleticism is just, I drool when I think of what Rob Ryan could do with him in his defense across the field from Junior Gallet. I like Brandon Scherff. He would be a pretty good replacement for Grubbs. I don't think our line would take that much of a step back with him and Evans. Amari Cooper, a lot of mock drafts have him falling for whatever reason. If he's at 13, I would not be surprised if the Saints pick him. Colston is getting up in years, and he had a down year last year by his standards. A guy like Cooper could come in, not have to be that number one for his first year, get his feet wet, and then we'll see what happens with Colston next year. With the Jimmy Graham trade, we picked the 31st pick. I think that's around where I would like to see inside linebacker. Eric Kendricks from UCLA or Stephen Anthony from Clemson. Both of those guys, I think, would win a starting position pretty easily. Danielle Ellerby and David Hawthorne aren't exactly Luke Kuechly's out there. Cornerback at 31, Marcus Peters or Jalen Collins from LSU could be there. Peters, I think that we have the discipline on the team to keep him in line. And he seems, from everything I've heard in interviews, he's impressed teams with the way he's taken the blame for everything that happened. It's really hard to predict what we're going to do any farther than that, because we like to wheel and deal so much. But I would be pretty happy with a combination of any of those two guys.
And for my books, it's pretty easy, really. It's going to be quarterback at the top of the first round. I think that's nailed on now. For me personally, it's got to be Winston over Marcus Mariota. And it's simply because he comes out of that pro-style system. He's learned that under Jimbo Fisher. He's used to getting in a huddle, calling plays, calling audibles, going through progressions. And the key thing, I think, for Tampa is that he throws with anticipation into windows, which is something that Mariota's never had to do. For Lovey, I guess, having been with the Bears, and he went 10-6 and still got fired, and after this terrible, terrible first season in Tampa, he knows that he's got to win right away. And he can't really afford to bring in Marcus Mariota and slowly give him a bigger playbook week by week. He hasn't got the time to do that. So I think despite all the off-field concerns for Jameis, which is something Marcus doesn't have to contend with. I think he's got to go with Winston. He's a perfect complement. He's got a big enough arm to make use of Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson on the outside. He's a natural leader. You saw that at the Combine when he was saying he wanted to be compared to Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and not Marcus Mariota. And that's the sort of confidence he will need going into a team that is 2-14 and hasn't made the playoffs since 2007. I think the fact that he's also local will help. You know, we've had some stars in the past come out of Florida. Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks come to mind, but I'm not going to put him in that category straight away. But that looks to be the direction they're heading in the first. And then I think the other two priority positions for us will be offensive line, which was unbelievably leaky last year. We gave up an awful lot of sacks. And one of the reasons that Josh McCown and Mike Glennon really struggled was because of that consistent pressure, especially up the middle. And the right side of the line was really, really bad with Patrick Omame over there and O'Neal Cousins. So it would not surprise me if they looked at someone at the end of the third round or second round along with defensive end. If it was my preference, I think they will go for a defensive end simply because of that. It's not really a Tampa 2 system anymore, but that cover 2 shell where they can use Gerald McCoy as your 3 technique, Clinton McDonald, and then if they could bring in someone like maybe a Danielle Hunter out of LSU, who ran a 4.57 40 at the Combine and put up 25 reps on the bench press, or maybe someone like Preston Smith, I would love to see. He got 9 sacks last year, and he's got really good short area quickness coming out of Mississippi State. I think that's the direction they're going to go, and then they'll look to add depth. Because I think Lovie's fairly happy with the picks that he got last year, where he focused all on the offense and he got Mike Evans and he got Austin Seferian Jenkins, those big bodies who you can put inside and they can win in the red zone. And I think if we can develop and get some really key offensive linemen, especially on the right side of the line now, Damar Dotson's been shifted over to the left-hand side with the departure of Anthony Collins. I think that Tampa could easily get back up to 8 wins fairly quickly if they draft well. And I have all the confidence in the world that selecting Winston will really kickstart that process. So now let's move on to the third segment, and that's going to be our question and answer segment. Each super fan's got one question for each of the other super fans. And again, we'll start in alphabetical order because it's worked so well thus far. And we'll start with Tim, our Atlanta super fan. Let's start. You ask the questions. You ask your 3 questions, and we'll cycle through that way.
Perfect. I'll start by picking on the Carolina Panthers. And it's very well known that teams with offensive line problems cannot win big games, especially when they have enormous, fragile, whiny quarterbacks. I just want to know, why is there so much emphasis being put on getting Cam weapons to throw to instead of blocking for him so he can survive? And I know you touched on this earlier, but I just want you to go a little bit deeper, if you will.
I agree completely. Like I said, last year, I thought it was the most obvious need outside of wide receiver, and we ignored the offensive tackle, and I think we suffered. We decided to go with Kelvin Benjamin, who I thought was a decent pick. And this year, I just cannot see us ignoring that position. The early signing of Michael Orr, like I think, is an upgrade over Byron Bell. But if you look at the rest of the line, I mean, Ryan Khalil's a solid piece of center, but everything else, I've been very, very mix and match. Trey Turner hasn't been able to stay healthy. Same with Amini Sealotulu. Nate Chandler, I think, has been a decent piece, but I think he's more of a depth player. And it's just been terrible to watch. I think the first several games when Cam's ankle was really bothering him and he was forced to stay in the pocket, I do think Cam was throwing some of his best balls that he has in his entire career with the Carolina Panthers when he was forced to stay in the pocket. Some of his throws, whether it was being made or not, just very impressive. You could see which way he was thinking. It's not just swinging it and he's overthrowing people, but he had some nice placement. And as his ankle got healthy, he got a little more reliable on his legs. And the line just took more of a hit. And it'd be very tough to continue this despite Cam's size, the amount of hits he takes. We have taken, given him less opportunity at the goal line than more of a Mike Tolbert, even though Mike Tolbert was hurt a lot last year. But I think we relied more on Jonathan Stewart towards the goal line, Mike Tolbert towards the goal line. And even some of the design runs, I thought there were very few and far between. He would run on his own. But it's such a big need. I just have a hard time. We do not address it in the first round of the draft, let alone the second round. And it'd be very tough to continue the way they have been.
Next question is going to be for the Saints. And there was recently an article posted on NFL.com about a rumor where the Saints are looking to trade Drew Brees to move up to take Marcus Mariota. I just wanted your opinion on whether or not you thought that article was clickbait or a potential legitimate move based on the recent fire sale that we're seeing in New Orleans.
Well, first of all, you can look at Brees' production last year. It was a down year by his standards, but his standards are for a Hall of Fame quarterback. Last year, he was first in passing yards, fifth in passing touchdowns, and sixth in total quarterback rating. He had a lot of interceptions. A lot of that is trying to force the ball when there's nothing there, especially to Graham. And as you see, as the season wore on with Graham's injury, he wasn't the same player as he normally is. And a lot of defenses started keying in on that. And with the added pressure Brees has seen from the interior line, he wasn't able to sit in the pocket and step up and make his progressions. He was forcing the ball in the windows that just weren't there. Matter of fact, through the first 12 games last year, he was on track to meet or exceed his average in every major quarterback category. And as the season went on, you see the production from steals drop off a cliff, and same thing with Graham. I think a lot of the talk came because of the cap number, and it is ridiculous to have that high a percentage of the cap tied up in one player. But a lot of that is because of what Drew Brees means to the team and the city. I mean, if you think about the 40-ish years that the Saints have been in the league, we were a laughing stock year in, year out until Brees got here. And as long as he's putting up Hall of Fame-worthy numbers, he's not going to go anywhere. As a matter of fact, at the NFC coaches' breakfast this morning, Sean Payton said regarding that, and I quote, "We can't control it. What do you do when there's no truth to any of it? There's not one like iota." So if someone's written something like that, it's either been taken out of context completely or just fabricated. And Mickey Loomis touched on it earlier in the week. I don't know where those got manufactured from. I haven't made a single call asking anybody about Drew Brees. I think just in general, some media members who have too much time on their hands, and they start coming up with these what-if scenarios. So that's the extent of that. And I think that Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis both know that if they get rid of Drew Brees a year too early, 2 years too early, and he goes to another team and wins a championship, that they're going to get run out of town. Now, the Saints are in the market for a quarterback. We do have a young guy on the roster out of Tulane in Ryan Griffin. He was an undrafted free agent a couple of years ago. And what's nice about him is the head coach of Tulane was a former Saints assistant coach. So Ryan Griffin has been in the same offense for 6 years now. So he's familiar with the complexities of it. And every time he's gotten to play in the preseason, he's looked fantastic. I wouldn't be against seeing him if we get into some out-of-control games just to see how he reacts. But I think the coaches like what they have in him. They brought him up to the active roster last year to keep him from getting picked off by another team. If they're not convinced he's the future, I would much rather a guy like Bryce Petty or Brett Hundley with one of our 2 third-round picks, or even maybe Shane Carden or Sean Mannion in the 5th this year, just because I still think Brees has a year or two left. And I'm fully expecting once they get this extension they're working on with Cam Jordan done, Brees is going to be the next in line. I don't see him playing for another team. I honestly think that he will be a Saint for the next 3 or 4 years. I mean, you see what Tom Brady and Peyton Manning are doing right now, and nobody's talking about their age, it seems. Manning, I guess, a little bit, but they're showing that you can still be competitive at their age, and Brees isn't there yet.
And just as a follow-up question, and I just want a yes or no. Drew Brees is 36 years old. Do you win another Super Bowl with him at the helm?
Yes.
You're crazy.
Ooh. I got a follow-up question as well. Does Sean Payton's future tie with Drew Brees?
There was rumors maybe last offseason that Sean Payton was looking to get out of the head coaching. He wanted to go back to Dallas, where his family was from. There were a lot of rumors about him leaving to go to Dallas. I think he is tied to Brees in a way, in that I don't know if he's going to want to start over if he doesn't feel like he has a satisfactory quarterback on the roster when Brees decides it's time to hang up. But like I said, I believe that he knows that if he gets rid of Drew Brees too early, that he's going to be run out of town.
All right. And my last question is going to be for Daniel and the Buccaneers. I'm going to be a little mean for a second. You haven't made the playoffs since 2007. So that's 7 years for those of you counting at home. During that time, we've had the global financial crisis. Swine flu happened. The iPad was originally announced. The royal wedding was held and consummated. Michael Jackson died. Barack Obama was elected twice. We've gotten a new pope. And we've had 9 different iPhone models. With everything that's happened during that time, do you really think that Jameis Winston's going to fix it?
Hey, we can't get much worse than what we're doing right now. Let's face it. And the only reason you put the royal wedding stuff in there is because I'm British, so I'm taking that first. You know, with Jameis, it's a really difficult question to answer because, you know, you can't project quarterbacks no matter what kind of system they've come out of. And a lot of his success is going to be based on the offensive line anyway. But ultimately, you can't get worse than McCown and Glennon. Glennon's average, he's not playoff caliber. He'll be useful to have as a backup. But we need the guy that can take us to the next level and can be there for 10 years. And the closest we're going to get is Winston. If we don't take Winston, we're going to be looking at next year's draft and it's just another lost season. So, I mean, the main thing for us to be able to compete and get back to the playoffs is to be able to pass the ball consistently. And we haven't had a 60% completion passer since Josh Freeman in 2010. Now, that makes me want to cry a little bit. But I think the fact that he's played in that pro-style system will help. You need to have a quarterback who can come in and compete from day one, especially in a division with Drew Brees, Matt Ryan and Cam Newton. And the other thing to bear in mind in the NFC South is I think all of the teams have pretty good defensive lines. You know, you've got Junior Gallette and Cameron Jordan for the Saints. You've got Charles Johnson with the Panthers, and they've got a really good front seven. And then to a lesser extent with the Falcons, you've got Claiborne's come over and you've got Babineau. So I think being able to protect him will be the key bit. You know, it's a pretty much foregone conclusion he's going to go there. But I think he's the closest thing we're going to get to a franchise quarterback. I haven't looked at the draft next year, but I can't see anyone that's going to be touted as highly as him, despite all the off-field baggage. And as long as we supplement his pick with that right protection up front, he's got all the weapons there to succeed. He's got good skill position players, I think. You know, it was a down year for the running back, but we do still have Martin and Charles Sims out of the backfield who can catch the ball. And then Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans both put up 1,000-yard seasons. So I think he's got all the tools to succeed. If he comes in there with the right mindset, doesn't get into trouble, I think it's the closest thing we've got to getting that quarterback that will push us over the top and at least make us competitive in that division. Shall we move on to Jimmy then? And you can fire away with your 3 questions.
All right, I'll go reverse order here. So I'll ask you, Daniel, my first question for you. I think everyone knows Jameis Winston's the obvious pick at 1. But I just see a glaring need with your pass rush. I don't know who's going to be rushing the quarterback outside of Gerald McCoy. Who do you think is going to be filling those needs? I understand you brought in Bruce Carter, Henry Melton. I'm just not convinced that you're going to have a pass rush. Can you give me a feel for what you think Tampa Bay is going to do to fix that need?
Defensive end is really going to be one of the 3 priority positions along with quarterback and the offensive line. I think we have managed to get a lot of pressure up the middle. McCoy, who is the best defensive tackle in the league, by the way. I'll just put that out there right now. And Clinton McDonald combined for 13.5 sacks last year. I think it's supplementing that by getting guys on the edge through the draft. And I think they will address that really early on. They've brought in Henry Melton, who got 5 sacks last year, and I think he's got 20 and a half sacks over his time in the league. But we've got to get to quarterbacks who are good at evading pressure. I think it's fair to say that Ryan Breeve and Newton are all very good at throwing on the run. So for us, it'll be about getting a defensive end presence. And two guys that I've already picked up on would be Danielle Hunter and Preston Smith, because I think they're going to be available in that second, third round range. So you wouldn't have to mortgage the farm. You wouldn't have to move up. I don't think there's any chance we're going to take Leonard Williams. So that would be the route I think they will take, and that's the route I want them to take. Other than that, I think it's going to be manufactured pressure, because Lovey is well known for not blitzing. They only blitzed on 20% of dropbacks last year, which was 30th in the NFL. And actually, when deciding not to blitz, the Buccaneers were more successful. It's going to be one of his biggest decisions, Lovey. If he's going to continue with this cover two, you have to get pressure with 4 or 5 guys. And I think he's going to have to address that by getting someone like Hunter or Smith.
Very interesting. Very interesting. All right, my next question will be for Tim in Atlanta. Atlanta's lost a lot on the offensive line, offensive side of the ball, I feel like. I mean, Steven Jackson's gone. Roddy White's another year older. Harry Douglas is gone, which I think is an underrated piece that's gone. With Dan Quinn taking over, do you think the offense changes significantly? Do you think the shootout days in Atlanta are over? Are you convinced Devontae Freeman could be a Marshawn Lynch type of back? I do like the signing of Leonard Hankerson. I think he can produce in that Harry Douglas role. But are you confident that the offense will stay the course, or do you think they take a step back?
Yeah, as far as that, I don't think the shootout days are over at all. Last year, towards the end of the season, when Devontae Freeman was getting a little bit more playing time, he brought a real spark in on the offense. I'm not expecting him to be a Marshawn Lynch-style back. That's not his game. I'm looking more that he could be, a Darren Sproles, a C.J. Spiller-type back. And, while that's not ideal for my starter, number one running back to be that type of player, especially when behind him on the depth chart we have Anton Smith, who is essentially the exact same. It's not ideal to have that, but it is good for Matt Ryan to be able to have that kind of outlet coming out of the backfield. And Devontae Freeman was good coming out of the backfield, making a few catches last year in limited time. More understated, leaving than Steven Jackson, which good riddance, Steven Jackson. The only thing you did for us was not fumble. He was so slow getting to the offensive line when he would get there at all. And if it weren't for the one huge play that he made, I want to say against Arizona, where he busted like a 50-yard run, I think he would have finished the season at 26 total yards. Now, don't tell him I said that, because he's an enormous man who could rip me in half very easily. But realistically, I'm not going to miss him. I'm going to miss Jacquizz Rodgers more. Rodgers was fantastic in pass protection. Put him in on third down. You knew that we were passing, and he would just sit there, and whichever linebacker was coming in on Matt Ryan, he would just pop him in the mouth. And Quiz is a tiny dude, but he would just step in there and do that, where Devontae Freeman's still lacking on that. I don't know if he's skittish to take that hit, or he's just not able to read it yet, but, he's still lacking in that part. We signed Jacob Tammy last week, and I know that's not a huge signing. I believe at the time I said it's kind of like when I wanted to go to high school prom, I ended up with my third choice. I wanted Jordan Cameron or Charles Clay, and we ended up with Jacob Tammy, and that's fine. Yeah, he had relative success under Peyton Manning when they were in Indianapolis together. But it's a huge upgrade over the zero or negative factor that Levine Toilolo was. So that's going to open some stuff up in the middle of the field and take a little bit of pressure off of Roddy White, where, as I said earlier, he's just going to end up being in the slot and just picking stuff up. I don't miss Harry Douglas. Great guy off the field, did a lot in the community, and that's going to be missed. But Leonard Hankerson's going to be able to step in that role and do the exact same thing. I'm not too worried about the offense. And if anything, I'm just worried about the defense.
See, my only thing with Harry Douglas, I don't think he's a great player, but he was always there and always was consistent, I felt like, when Roddy White was out.
The biggest thing with consistency with Harry Douglas is he was consistent at being able to drop the ball. And he did have the good year in 2013 when we ended up going 4-12 because, you know, Julio and Roddy were both out for stretches of time. I mean, if Matt Ryan only has one above average wide receiver, he's going to make him look really good. You know, Matt Ryan's got to throw to somebody. Matt Ryan is one of the better quarterbacks in the league, not elite. I'll go ahead and throw that out there. He's not. But, I mean, you put me out there, I'm going to get four balls for 35 yards. And, you know, Matt Ryan's going to be the only reason I got that.
All right, my last question is for Chase down in New Orleans. It's kind of similar to the question to Tim. I'm going to focus on the offensive side of the ball. Are you concerned with who Drew Brees has to work with? I know Drew Brees is Drew Brees, and Marcus Colston, I think, is an okay receiver these days. And when I wrote up this question, I completely forgot about Brandon Cooks as well. So add him into the factor, minus Jimmy Graham. I do like the signing of C.J. Spiller because I think he can be a Darren Sproles at a much better value. I think Spiller is a much better player. But kind of make me feel a little more comfortable. How do you think the New Orleans Saints offense will be this year? Will it take a step back? Do you think it improves, more run heavy? If you just emphasize how the offense will be this upcoming season.
Like I said earlier, we cut Pierre. C.J. Spiller, I think, is going to fill in suitably for him. Like I said, the 1 year where he had an offensive coordinator who used him the way I think Peyton is going to use him, he had almost 1,700 all-purpose yards. And that's almost 500 receiving yards, which is pretty much on the high side of what Pierre was ever able to do for us. I think the difference between him and a guy like Sproles or Bush, who we've used as satellite backs in the past, the defense is going to have to honor the run when he's on there because he's not a small cat like Sproles was, and he's not skittish going up the middle like Reggie was his first couple of years in New Orleans. Matter of fact, at his introductory press conference, one of the first things he said to the media was that he can't wait to see what it's like to run against seven-man boxes. That's not something he ever had in Buffalo. As a matter of fact, he put up those 1,700 yards in 2012 with Ryan Fitzpatrick as his quarterback. This is a guy that Breeze is going to look for him much more often than any of the quarterbacks he's ever played with. We still have Colston. Colston's down year last year, 900-plus yards, 5 touchdowns. Cooks, as a rookie, was in the running for Offensive Rookie of the Year until he broke his thumb, unfortunately. He's a guy that Peyton is going to love with a year of experience because he's going to see time out wide. He's going to see time in the slot. He's going to see time in the backfield. You're going to see Cooks mismatched everywhere possible for Peyton. Do we have the players on the roster to replace Jimmy Graham and Steeles? I don't think so. I mean, you're looking to replace 2,200 yards and 14 touchdowns from last year. Sean Payton is really high on Josh Hill. As a matter of fact, this morning, there were 5 separate occasions during his press conference where he stopped and gushed about how much he loves Josh Hill. And I'm saying literally he said that he loves the guy. And that's a guy that had 5 touchdowns on 17 receptions last year, so he can be a red zone threat. I think he will be much better known this year than last year because he was an undrafted free agent from a couple of years ago. And our number 2 tight end is Ben Watson, who wasn't too long ago he was the leading receiver in all receiving stats for the Browns, which I know is not saying much, but not a bad deal for your number 2 tight end. Behind Colston and Cooks, you have Nick Toon. Toon's had an up-and-down career with the Saints so far. He's a mid-round pick. He has the NFL bloodline. His dad played in the NFL. Toward the end of the season, when he got time to get comfortable in the offense on a consistent basis, he started looking pretty well. And I think this year he's going to step up and be more consistent for us, which is pretty much all we could ask for in a number 3 receiver. I think that our top 3 is pretty comparable to what you guys all have. I mean, I would take Colston, Cooks, and Toon over Carolina's Benjamin, Cotchery, and Jen. Tampa Bay, I like Nick Toon as a 3rd receiver more than Lewis Murphy. So I think the receiver problem is a little bit overblown, mainly because you're talking about a guy who is one of the best offensive threats in the league in Jimmy Graham. And the Saints were not shopping him as a lot of the national media made it out to be. They were actually trying to trade Steeles to the Seahawks. And the talks kind of evolved from there to Graham. So I think that kind of came as a surprise to the Saints, but they decided, for whatever reason, they were willing to let him go, which, I mean, in the past, Drew Brees has worked with tight ends like Mark Campbell, Eric Johnson, and Billy Miller and put up 4,500-plus yards. It's going to depend a lot more this year on him having more time in the pocket and going through his progressions, because in his early years, you see years where he has 1,000-yard receiver, and then there's four or five guys with 500-600 yards. The guys we have on the roster can come close. We have a couple of young guys that Peyton was really high on late in the year last year, in Shontavious Jones and Brandon Coleman. They were two undrafted guys. Especially Brandon Coleman's huge guy, 6'6", 220 pounds, can be a big red zone threat. Was working in the offseason this year on being more reliable with his hands, because that was a big knock on him coming out of college, was his drops. But he has everything else you can ask for in a receiver, and he's going to get a shot to get some playing time this year. Receiver is going to be one of our picks in the first 78 picks of the draft. We have five picks there. We can move up, move down, pretty much however we want. Receiver is going to be a target there, I feel. I don't think it's necessary, though, because I think a lot of what the Saints are doing are leading me to believe that they want to get more toward a run-heavy offense. Our two best seasons were 13-3 with Sean Payton and Drew Brees at the helm. And in both those years, those are the only 2 years since they've been here that we've had a top-10 rush offense. So Payton seems to be wanting to get back to that ball control, big play offense that we were known for. And that's what we got to work with. And I think that we're going to see an improvement this year. We do have a weak division, and we have a pretty easy schedule looking at least on paper. So I don't think the sky's falling like a lot of people think, but I do think that you're going to see a more run-focused team than years past.
And Chase, go ahead, fire away with your three questions.
All right. I'm going to start with Tim. Tim, my question for you, it's a well-known fact around the league that in Peyton's tenure with the Saints, were 13-5 against you guys. I've been saying for years that until y'all could fix your pass rush, y'all are going to continue to lose close games to us. Over the last three seasons, you've been on average the 28th in the league in sacks per season. You've spent a lot of money. Over those same years, you brought in five front seven players through the draft and signed three in free agency. Yet last season, y'all took a step back with y'all. We're showing with only 22 team sacks. This offseason, once again, you've brought in guys like Brooks Reed, O'Brien Schofield, and Adrian Claiborne. Do you feel that you have the right guys on the roster now to fix the sack problem, or do you feel like you have to address it with your number 8 pick? And if so, who do you feel is the best fit in Dan Quinn's scheme?
As far as that, you know, when you brought up this question, I went to pull the people that we've drafted through that. And since 2012, we've only had one player in the front seven who's been drafted before the fourth round, and that was last year with Rashid Hageman. And I feel good about Hageman, but, you know, when you look at the rest of the players on this list, Jonathan Massaquoi, Travion Robertson, those guys were both drafted in 2012 in the fifth and seventh round. Neither of them are on the team anymore. In 2013 in the fourth, you had Malachi Goodman and Stanley Mponga in the fourth and the fifth. And they're both just rotational players. And then last year, you know, like I said, we had Hageman in the second, Shembo in the fourth, Marcus Sproul in the fifth, Yawin Smallwood in the seventh, and Tyler Starr in the seventh. And, you know, when you look at the people that we've been able to draft, you know, the only, I'd say, two that I feel like have any role in Dan Quinn's system at all would be Rashid Hageman and Prince Shembo. Shembo, I think, is going to be the guy who ends up backing up whoever we take with our number 8 pick. And if it's up to me, you know, I really want either Dante Fowler or Vic Beasley. You know, Fowler, I feel like, is going to be the most versatile because he's going to be able to play a four-down defensive end and a stand-up rushing linebacker. And with his speed, you know, he's going to be able to cover, you know, a tight end like a Jimmy Graham awake. And Vic Beasley, you know, just – He would just be the stand-up rushing linebacker, but his combine numbers were absolutely insane, and I have no worries about him being able to get to the quarterback, especially in a system like this. And I like the maturity with how long he was at Clemson and, you know, how effective he was there. So, you know, one of those two guys, I think it's, you know, who we're going to be able to bring, you know, who we will bring in and, you know, will be a big key player. But, you know, I'm not anticipating anybody in the team to get 10 sacks. I'd like to see, you know, 3 to 4 people have, you know, between 6 and 7, somewhere in there. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Jimmy, your front seven is one of the most complete groups in the league. So much that they mask your need at the cornerback position. Young guys on your roster are Ben Wakari, Josh Norman, Melvin White, Carrington Bynum as your top four, and might be the most anonymous unit in the NFL. Sell me on the young corners you have on your roster, or tell me how crucial it is for you guys to land a difference maker at the position this year in the draft.
You know, at the beginning of the last season, I would have said we need to do something about the corner position immediately. But as the season progressed and putting Josh Norman back out there with Ben Wickery, the secondary really came together, especially with Roman Harper going out there and finally getting rid of that guy that came from Atlanta, Thomas Decoud. Now that Trey Boston's out there, and I'm much more confident in our secondary. I'm not saying that it's great, but I think it's fine. I think what Gettleman's going to do, like I said earlier, I think he believes that we're going to have a bigger need at the defensive line front to keep our secondary from being exposed. So I think Gettleman will approach this draft by picking up another pass rusher and maybe picking up another Ben Wickery-type player in the 5th or 6th round to plug and play and hope to develop. But, I mean, it'd be nice to have an elite corner out there. I just don't think that's going to be part of the philosophy in the team building. I think they're going to focus on that front seven, keep it rotating just like he did in New York, Dave Gettleman, that is, and just plug and play in the secondary.
Lastly, for you, Dan, to most fans, it's a foregone conclusion that y'all are taking a quarterback with the first pick. He's most likely going to be the day one starter because that's how the NFL seems to work now with first-round quarterbacks. Last season, y'all finished 29th in run offense. Doug Martin was your leading rusher with less than 500 yards. One of the best things you can do for a young quarterback is to give him a strong run game to take some pressure off of him. I know the problems with your run game start with the O-line, but by the time you guys pick at the top of the second round, most of the elite guys are going to be off the board most likely. If either Gurley or Gordon are available with your second-round pick, do you jump on one?
One of the most surprising things for me last year was how much we threw the ball. I think we passed on 62% of our dropbacks, and we only averaged 22 rushes a game, and that actually surprised me because in Lovie's last 2 years in Chicago, they were both in the top 10 in rush attempts. So I think this season he will put more emphasis on trying to run the ball. But to be honest, I can't see them going running back early in the draft. I think he's fairly happy with what he's got at the moment, and it's about committing back to that and building an offensive line that can create holes for them. Our O-line is where it all starts, and that's going to allow the quarterback to be better. It's going to allow the running backs to be better. Gordon and Gurley are really good backs that, you know, they hit the hole hard. They're good at shaking tackles, and I think they will be able to make the step up to the next level, but I don't think that will be in our plans. They're probably both going to be gone in the first round anyway, so they wouldn't be available in the second for us. But, I can't see them going running back in the first round. Right then, so I will fire away with my three questions, and I'll start with Tim. After a season where the Falcons were last in the league defending the pass, and you've brought in Dan Quinn now, do you think he's going to use the draft to rebuild a legion of boom in the South, bearing in mind you've brought your defensive line help in through free agency?
I feel like the defensive line help is going to be, you know, like I've mentioned a few times already tonight, the biggest focus with bringing in a pass rusher with that number 8 pick. As far as rebuilding a legion of boom, I know that the statistics say that against the pass, we were horrible last year. And the biggest reason for that is you give any quarterback between 5 and 10 seconds to throw and they're going to find a hole. That's just too long to ask any NFL athlete to cover, even if it's Desmond Trufant, who is one of the better up-and-coming corners in the league, and even on Twitter was given the shutdown corner tag by Richard Sherman. So, you know, just that kind of praise coming from, you know, people who are in the league, and that's like one of the only things that Richard Sherman and Patrick Peterson were able to agree on last year with the, you know, Desmond Trufant is actually coming along. You know, further in the secondary for us, Robert Alford, you know, was decent last year until he broke his wrist and missed the second half of the season. And William Moore has been consistently good when he's healthy, but just had a couple fluke injuries. Took a running back to the chest, and you know, I want to say it was a broken rib last year, collarbone, something like that. But he missed some time. The biggest thing that I'm looking at is not necessarily rebuilding the secondary in the draft, but I want to see the development of Desmond Southward, who was our third round pick last year. And a lot of people say that he was a reach, but you know, looking at his stats. You know, he ran a 4.38 with spine issues at the combine going into last year. So he had a spine injury, you know, his senior year or his final year at Wisconsin. And, you know, just being able to move that quickly. And he's also got a really interesting build. Every time I saw him, it looked like Larry Fitzgerald was sitting out there at safety for us. But there's a lot of rumors going around in Flowery Branch about Desmond Southward learning how to play corner. And they may put him in that nickel corner slot. Or they may end up bumping Robert Alford down because of his size and putting Southward out across from Desmond Trufant, which would be fantastic in my opinion, because with the speed and the size, you know, having two really big corners is more important in my opinion than having two safeties, you know, that are able to just crush people. So as far as the Legion of Boom in Atlanta, I don't see it happening. It would be nice, but in my opinion, that's not the thing that made Seattle great. The thing that made Seattle great was their ability to pressure the quarterback.
Jimmy, now the days of the thunder and lightning are behind you and D'Angelo Williams is gone. Do you think that the Panthers are going to address that in the draft and really commit to running the ball from a conventional running game instead of relying on Cam to tuck the ball in an effort to really protect him and keep him healthy for all 16 games?
Ah, man, I'm sad to see D'Angelo and the John the Stewart combo go away, but it is what it is. It's a change that's needed. And that being said, like I said, I am very concerned John the Stewart trying to stay healthy for all 16 games. I just don't see it. So let's just say John the Stewart's out for maybe 4 or 5 games at minimum. We brought back Fozzie Whitaker, which I think was a nice rotation piece in there. But I do definitely think we address the running back position in the draft. I've been reading a lot of things that they have a lot of interest in Tevin Coleman out of Indiana. Another player that I think would be interesting to see with John the Stewart would be Duke Johnson from Miami. I think that would be good, another Lightning and Thunder type duo. But even backs like TJ Yeldon later on in the draft, I think there's a player out there that Gettleman will target, will get later in the draft to pair up with John the Stewart. Hopefully John the Stewart does stay healthy for at least another year until we can get that next back in there.
And my last question now is for Chase. Rob Ryan led a defense that gave up 132 rushing yards a game and 19 runs of 20 yards or more. How do you think the Saints will address that issue in the 2015 season?
Well, you really can't look past the fact that we finished last year as the worst team in the league in missed tackles. On over 13% of our defensive snaps, there was a tackle missed by our defense. And that started with the rock of our linebacker core, Curtis Lofton. While he led the team and was fourth in the league in tackles, he also led the league in missed tackles with 22. That's telling me that Rob Ryan is putting the players where they need to be. The guys just aren't wrapping up and tackling like they're supposed to. And there's really nothing that Ryan can do about that. He can't go on the field and tackle guys. Last year, you also see Kenny Vaccaro have a sophomore slump. He was missing tackles that he wasn't doing in 2013. In 2013, the guy was a tackling machine. He also saw three different guys starting opposite him as the year wore on, as we lost Bird after the fourth game, and then we lose Raphael Bush and Vinny Sanceri in the very short term after that. We just could not get our top tacklers on the field, and hopefully that'll be remedied a little bit this year with that addition of Daniel Ellerby from the Kenny Steeles trade with Miami. He lost in the first quarter of the first game last year, but in 2013 he had over 100 tackles, and he should replace Lofton without us taking too much of a step back. This year, believe it or not, is going to be the first year that Rob Ryan has any say-so in the draft process. Even the Jarris Bird signing, he had nothing to do with that. I'm hoping that this year, with him being able to pick and choose players that he feels fit his scheme, you're going to see us solidify the defense. And I think that early picks at both linebacker positions are a must, and I would not be surprised to see a defensive tackle chosen early. Broderick Bunkley was willing to take a pay cut to come back this year, and when he was healthy last year, we were much more stout against the run. When he got hurt and Jonathan Jenkins was asked to step in, he just wasn't what we needed in a defensive tackle. So hopefully after the draft, we'll have three new starting linebackers, and that should help to tighten up the run defense.
Each of these teams aren't really that far away if they just fix a few things in the draft. That will do it for the fifth episode of Next Fan Up. This has been your NFC South Roundtable. Be sure to check in on Saturday, where Pod Vader will be recording all about LA. Will a team relocate there? Will it be as early as 2016? And on that podcast, we will have the Chargers, Raiders, and Rams superfans. And also, we'd love to hear from you if you disagree, agree, or if you just want to send in some questions. You can email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at NFU Podcast, or go to our Facebook page, which is Next Fan Up. So thanks, guys, for calling in. It's been a great round table.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Rise up, Atlanta.
And we will see you all down the road.